Welcome to the final edition of our Legal History podcast with me, Alex Aldridge, and Alan Paul, who's going to be answering some of my questions today and having a conversation with me about the period from 2016 through until the present day. Welcome, Alan.
Hi, nice to be back.
And we've been doing these podcasts, the time period that we've covered all the way back from the late 70s right through now, we'll be taking you up to the present day. So it's been a really, really interesting journey. And certainly this period from 2016 until today, I mean, only 7 years, but, you know, so much has happened in that time. And going back to 2016, Alan, I mean, that year now is associated with two big, quite different political developments, Brexit in the UK and Trump in the US. Yeah. But they were things that massively affected corporate law firms.
No, I don't think so. I think they live on, of course, and we're going to see Trump again and Brexit still in people's minds. But I don't think, from the corporate law firm point of view, the international law firms who have big European offices, all of that sort of stuff, I don't think they would say that, while they were worried at the time, because all big new events create uncertainty and the unknown, I think they worried at the time, but then after a pretty short period, realised, no, we can cope with this. You have to adapt a bit, but it's business as usual. And they've still got all those offices in Europe. They're still doing EU law. They're still doing local laws, and they're still doing UK law.
Yeah.
It will affect transactional business, of course, about some things will happen on continental Europe in the EU that used to happen here as well, but won't happen. Mm. But there's, you know, these things, when they happen, same with, they give rise to a lot of regulatory change, they give rise to new issues, and good lawyers thrive on change and new regulation and new problems, because people need new solutions.
And I guess Brexit generated a lot of work for lawyers, I guess, and probably still is doing so, I'm sure it is.
Well, I suspect it does, yeah. I'm not sure it does, particularly in the field of M&A and corporate activity, but it probably does in lots of others. But there are a lot of other bigger events.
Yeah.
That's the point, and I think...
And kind of looking at it, again, just stepping back and looking at it, I mean, what was kind of really important back in 2016 was you had tech becoming this dominant sector, so the big tech companies in the US becoming enormous and becoming really key clients for law firms. And you know as they, I suppose you go back 10 years from 2016, you go back 10 years and the dominant clients were the banks, and suddenly 10 years on you've got big tech companies dominant clients. And I noticed you started seeing lawyers, like corporate lawyers, kind of wearing hooded tops and things and trying to dress like Mark Zuckerberg, and I suppose that was a good signal. That was a pretty clear signal that how tech was becoming the dominant sector.
Yeah, it has become. And of course, the biggest companies in the world now, particularly in the US, and not many here, are tech companies, and technology itself that is coming out of these, if you like, a lot of media companies, essentially.
Mm.
Changes the way you communicate and the way lawyers communicate with clients, and the issues that, of themselves, these companies give rise to huge issues. What big law firms like, they like big multinational companies, or people like Linklater, Allen Over, they like big multinational companies which do a lot of things and therefore create a lot of issues.
Mm.
Like they do M&A and they create antitrust issues, which is always bet the farm stuff, so it requires a lot of legal, and that continues. The tech sector has provided a lot of that, but there are, we should talk about, there are other sectors too, but that apart, the work they generate, they also of course have created, how is technology affecting law and the practice of law, and that in 2016 was becoming even more and more influential, and we can talk about how it is today. And actually it's one of the big drivers for implications for tomorrow.
Yeah, because it was around that time that law firms really started to embrace kind of so-called legal tech,
yes.
improving their own systems, use of some bits of AI to do things. And I remember kind of, as a sort of legal market observer, if you'd gone back a bit earlier and, you know, it was seen as a kind of nerdy thing that wasn't that interesting, whereas suddenly it was seen as, suddenly from about 2016, legal tech became quite a glamorous area that students and junior lawyers were interested in. And it was a good thing. I mean, it's very much an ongoing process, but was sort of driving inefficiencies in law firms, which had been known as kind of slightly old-fashioned in the way they were doing things.
Yeah, I think the big, and particularly today, and what the implications of tech is going to be, we'll come to that, talk about AI and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it did, and it changed. I think the law firms who have disappeared or have merged, et cetera, with bigger firms, they adapted, and innovation became a sort of bit of a buzzword, you know, and you've had, I don't know, for quite a lot of years, the FTs in and most innovative lawyers, haven't you, that sort of stuff. And most of the stuff that was being done around that was most successful was actually involved some technical application or other, which I'm the last person in the world to really talk about technical applications, by the way.
I suppose one of the things with these developments in tech in law firms was that, broadly speaking, you saw junior lawyer tasks getting commoditized and automated. And there was a lot of talk, I remember, around sort of 2016, 2017, about trainee numbers, and people were saying, oh, they're gonna fall off the cliff. And I've got an example. I mean, I spoke to a partner at a big London corporate law firm, international firm, and I remember them telling me, and they with a big trainee intake, and they said very confidently, they said, and this conversation was in 2017, they said 5 years from now our trainee intake will have halved at least, and it'll all be done by sort of AI paralegals, senior lawyers overseeing it. And actually you look now, you know, 6 years on from that conversation, and the trainee numbers at that particular firm have gone up. They're up a fair bit, 10-15%, and that's kind of reflected across the market.
Yeah.
And they were wrong. This lawyer that I was speaking to at the time, an experienced partner who was expertise in this area. And so it shows you that it's kind of unpredictable, isn't it, when law firms embrace new technology?
Well, yeah, it's not just unpredictable technology, of course, but yes. I mean, anybody who tries to predict 5 years of anything in this world, of course they can do it with great confidence, but honestly, it has to be taken with a bit of a pinch of salt. I'm sure that chap or lady would have thought, oh, no, nobody will ever remember I said that. Mm. And so, you know, normally people don't remember, so you don't get proved wrong, but...
Yeah.
So I think, yes, I don't think anybody has been able to predict, and they won't be able to for what's going to happen in the next 5 years. But what we do know, and I think it's pretty clear, that things like AI, tech, and anything that's data-based, anything that requires analysis of lots of information, anything... which is pretty standardized, you know, straightforward building contracts, ordinary contracts, et cetera, a lot of that stuff will primarily be more efficiently, at least in the 90% of it, done by some AI type of thing.
Yeah.
And that will mean, I think, a very great benefit for lawyers.
Yeah.
That is, those days when actually lawyers, clients were having to pay very well trained and clever lawyers to do very mundane tasks.
Mm.
Those lawyers, in theory, shouldn't have to do those to anything like the same degree they used to, but they should be available to do much more interesting work.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a benefit for lawyers.
Yeah.
You may need fewer, but at least they'll be doing what they should be doing, which is thinking and doing smarter stuff.
It's interesting though, so far that there hasn't been a decrease in the number of lawyers at the big corporate firms.
No, and I think that's partly because I think the nature of the work, the amount of work, has just been exponentially increasing. And a lot of that is not the old, what used to be thought of, you know, M&A and sort of the very glamorous, more glamorous, high profile stuff. But there's so much regulation in so many areas. The tech companies alone, think about all the regulation discussion that's going on. And then you've got things like sanctions. You know, that's a really big thing today. Well, every big company in the world has to work out how to not breach sanctions, you know, trade regulation. So the amount of, if you like, the amount of types of work that are going on necessitates lawyers.
Yeah, so you've needed the technological developments just to enable it all to keep pace.
Yeah, I think so. So and the other thing I think is there are much more different types of jobs for lawyers, as we've said before. You know, the in-house jobs and the lawyer support things and people who project who are much more good at organisation. There's an awful lot of different roles for lawyers, I think, than the standard. Well, when we started this in the 1970s and early 80s,
We just went through and
became a partner. There was just a standard sort of career path and types of law that people did in those firms. Now it's much more. It's a different concept. And people, specialisation. Yeah. It's very hard to. I was talking to a guy the other day, he's a partner in a big firm. And the type of work he now does, you know, it's just health. It's health, healthcare. It's all about just in that.
Yeah.
I mean, before he used to be, say, an IP lawyer who did all the IP that there is, but now they know that somebody's going to focus on
very niche.
IP. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to do. And that could be really interesting for people. It depends what type of person you are and what you like doing. But
yeah.
So I think. It's not a bad thing. I think it's a plus. Yeah. We should embrace it as such.
So message to students sort of looking to get into the legal profession is don't worry too much about kind of talk of tech doomsday. It's a thriving sector.
No, I agree. And also though, get good at it.
Yeah, get good at the tech.
And understand you'll add value. But don't be frightened of what you've got to make it work for you. Yeah. That's what people have to do, isn't it?
And I suppose the shift that's certainly, that's taken place alongside tech and particularly post-pandemic has been the shift to flexible working from home. I mean, there was a bit of that pre-COVID, before COVID hit in 2020, but not anything like what's happened since then. And sort of, you know, now, I mean, it's quite a contrast now if you kind of go into a law firm, you know, one of the firms with a kind of modern office these days with sort of flexible working setup. I mean, there's quite a few good examples, probably too many to name, but you see, you know, you've got lawyers not coming in every day of the week by any means. You've got kind of people sitting around on their laptops, casually dressed. And it's a very different scene to what you'd have, and obviously all these kind of AI legal tech tools being used for things. It's a very different scene, not only from sort of 1978 when you started out, but from 2016.
Well, yes, and of course COVID. Oh, we will know, everybody who's on this, listening to this, will know and have their own view and experience of what happened in COVID. But it changed in 2 years. Things which may well have changed over 10, but it sort of brought everything. And I think this working from home, WFH, flexible working, I think it's always been something, even long before then, that law firms were grappling with. How can we, you know, because that's beneficial to people, flexible working and the firm and happy lives, which, despite what people might think about law firms, I think they do want their people to be have happy lives in some degree. And that was all going on. But this working from home, I worry about it quite a bit, because for young people, one of the worries actually is the older partners who get comfortable working from home because they've got lovely homes.
I think that happens quite a bit, anecdotally.
And that is bad for firms, because if those partners aren't in, then why should everybody else come in? And if those partners aren't in, people aren't learning from them, they're not.
Yeah.
And those partners also, their skills will start to wear out. I don't mean their technical skills, but all the other skills that really go to make a successful lawyer. So we were talking earlier, we talked about there will be thousands of good lawyers, and there will be clients who think, well, there's loads of law firms with good lawyers, of course there are. And that's true, you've got to be a good lawyer, don't begin when it comes to technical law and getting the answer. But then you've got the soft skills and the, can you simplify legal problems to provide a solution that a person who's not a lawyer can understand in two sentences, you know. You have to learn to be able to do those things. You have to learn, lawyering and clients is about relationships. If you want to have relationships through a screen, you think you can, well, you can try, but you can't. And, you know, the other things that you have to learn, how to work as a team, and actually get to know the people you work with so you like them, or, you know, all those other things, and that people like you, and the enjoyable things that go together, the social thing, and everything. If you don't turn up, nobody's going to know who you are. And you may not care, that's fine, but as long as you realise you're not going to make it as a long-term big hitter, if you like, for want of any word, but you're happy with what you're going to be doing, then that's fine.
Yeah, I suppose being on a slightly different track.
Everybody,
It's interesting the personal way some choice. Of the different firms are reacting to this, because I'm not sure if you've seen, but recently some US law firms in London have announced that their lawyers have to be in the office 4 days a week. Whereas it seems that some of the English, sort of the London-based international firms are saying, actually, we're offering a bit more of a flexible package, and they're using that as a way
selling
to compete with the US law firms where they can't quite compete for money.
Well, as I said, I think flexibility, that, and that's what this working from home gives people, you know, and so if you've got a family, whatever the reasons are, but you need to get back, well, that's great. But if it stops you coming in for 60% of your time or 50% of your time, I think you will have to accept you're going to be disadvantaged in some ways. You won't learn certain skills, but what the benefits to you as a person may outweigh all that.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But do it with your eyes open.
Yeah.
Not because of it, it's much nicer to sit around.
Yeah. I mean, could you have sort of foreseen this world when you're sort of back in the 80s?
Well, as I said, I don't think I could. You can foresee anything in 5 years. So if you ask me, did I foresee 40 years? No.
But if you'd have, I suppose, not, maybe a phrase that's slightly incorrectly, but if, say, if you were back in the 80s and you someone showed you the world now of sort of flexible working at law firms, would you think maybe they've lost their edge a bit? They've lost it a bit?
No, I don't know, really. I can't say, can I? But I don't think I would have necessarily, but I think what I would have said and what I would say now is that the law firms who are successful, they adapt and they're innovative and they change with the world as it goes along. But what doesn't really change much is the fact that being a lawyer in these firms is about client service, it's about relationships with clients. It doesn't matter, you know, and the fact that, you know, general counsel, they want people they can rely on and that they know and who they think care for them.
Yeah.
You know, and who are proactive and worry about their business and get to know their business. You know, you're never going to know somebody's business as well as they do, but to understand their issues, you know, to understand what bothers them, what their risks are.
Yeah.
And risk is another big thing that I'm worried about. And you can, to do that, that's not changed. That is, and I don't think that will ever change, because human beings who work in, until the Brave New World finally arrives, and we're all on happy pills, which, you know, maybe that's on the way, but but until that arrives, I think that's, if you go back to basics of what is this all about, client service, and it's working with your partners and your colleagues.
The risk point's a good one. It might be interesting to look at that now, because again, that's a sort of change you can look at from sort of 2016 until now, in that people and organisations have started to worry quite a bit about their reputation. And this might be a little bit related to the growth of social media, in terms of if you're associated with something bad, then that can have a very negative effect quite quickly, in a way you can't really control. You know, even if, say, the there's something negative that you're associated with, and there's an investigation launched against you. So much news is so immediate through social media and the internet that it kind of doesn't really matter what if you're found, if you've actually done these things, because it. So I suppose that means that clients worry a lot more about risk of doing stuff, and I guess lawyers come in a lot on this.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, there's risk. Client, I mean, you know, lawyers, but in big corporations, which is really what we're talking about, or sort of medium-sized corporations, which are the clients of the whether they're finance companies or energy companies or tech companies, they're really worried about, you know, their risk management for them, which is of all types of, you know, things, of people incurring big liabilities, you know, the things that around the legal failure. And that's what law firms have to worry about. But there's the reputational factor and misbehavior or whatever it is, or people, a little bit of fraud gets, or one, as soon as somebody smells something, it goes out as if, oh, it's true. And half the world thinks it's true. But if half the world's thinking it's true because they just pick up a thing and says, oh, this happened, even if it didn't, you're stuffed, because how do you ever come back from that? And so that reputational risk exists for our clients, but it exists so much for the law firms. And the bigger you get and the more partners you have and the more people work for you, there's risk management on your negligence, because especially once you start using AI and people become over-reliant on that stuff, maybe it's a risk management issue. That's on, you know, getting the stuff right. And law firms depend, these law firms, is all about their reputation for quality, getting it right, and delivering thing. And then there is stuff, as you say. It's a good example. When I was in practice was insider dealing, which is in the securities.
Mm.
People who ask me, "Well, is this technically okay to do what I'm planning to do?" Well, probably you can fit it into a legal thing that makes it genuinely okay. But if somebody thinks it might not be, and you an investigation starts, well, half the world thinks you're guilty. And so the investigation lasts 6 months, a year, and everybody's thinking, did he, didn't he? That's what it is. So hindsight being a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And so you just say, well, yeah, but it's too dangerous to do it because the risk is you get tarnished.
Yeah.
There's something you didn't necessarily do wrong, but everybody thinks it was, and by the time they think it is, even if you're innocent, you're dead.
Yeah. I suppose the downside, that does result in very kind of cautious kind
well, it can
behavior,
do.
Doesn't it?
It very, can do, and that's where good lawyers have to be brave
and
confident.
Mm.
And you learn that with experience, and you learn it also from other people, who watching them, how they build. Because if you're not willing to take risk, then you're not going to do anything much that's different, and you have to be able to weigh all that, and then that requires confidence. Yeah, anybody who just is too cautious will probably may do all right. Some people will like them because they're too cautious too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're too cautious, then you do your best to get everything right, and occasionally something will go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's life. I mean, failure is very important.
Yeah,
mistakes is important.
So even lawyers, it's dangerous to be too cautious as a lawyer.
Well, to anything.
But
it's much easier sometimes as a lawyer to be very cautious. But you have to analyse something and make a rational.
Yeah, yeah.
Of all the factors.
Yeah. And just the final point on risk, I suppose, just to tie it into the kind of the legal market. And, you know, the predictions for a reduction in the number of junior lawyers, I guess that's another of the factors that has just seen this sort of growth in work where lawyers are needed, that's behind the holding up in numbers, and if anything, increase in numbers.
This just
want to tie in before we move, because we touched on Brexit and Trump at the beginning. We are going to talk about politics or different political things in this period. But before we do, I just wanted to kind of segue from tech into some other important sectors that we've seen since 2016 grow and become more important and look set to become increasingly important over the years ahead. So, Alan, are any that you'd highlight as well as tech?
Yes, obviously there's. And these are talked about, I think, a lot in economic terms and, you know, where the jobs are going to be and all that sort of thing. But I think also in the legal world, remembering that for the firms we're talking about, we want things that they want to do things that are really important things, the big things. They're not, it's not just the everyday that any law firm can do. And, you know, tech is very important, but with, there is no tech without energy. I think I said that to you earlier. No tech, there's nothing without power.
Very good point.
Climate change, the thing we everybody's talking about, that has to be sorted out.
Yeah.
And even if it gets put off for a year or two, doesn't really make much difference. At the end of the day, all the stuff that goes around providing energy, distributing it, and all the things that we know that people talk about, that needs financing, it needs transactional, contractual stuff to make it all happen.
Yeah.
And that's work for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's quite as much work as there is for boiler engineers, because that's what I'd do, I think, if I was coming through now, to have a boiler engineer company, because there's work there for 30 years.
Okay.
There aren't enough boiler engineers and installers, so, you know.
Okay, so,
so if you don't want to do law, go in and become a boiler engineer. Yeah. So there's energy. That sector is obviously booming, and we all know what it is from green energy. But there's still oil and gas. They say that, for example, in the UK, I think, even we've gone carbon neutral by whatever year it happens to be, 2000, let's say 2055.
Mm.
But they still think that we'll be using, 25, 30, 50% might be oil and gas, 25% oil and gas.
Oh, really?
But carbon capture and other things.
Yeah.
Would mean they're not as shitty. Excuse my language, but you know what
that's
I mean.
That's fine.
Dirty.
That's,
Then what else? Well, COVID, I think, highlighted health. If you didn't need any help highlighting health.
Yeah.
Healthcare and developments in healthcare. That's tech, yes.
Yeah.
Biomedicine. You know. And it's phenomenal. You read something every day about advances in healthcare. So the big financing of healthcare, new ventures, a bit technical stuff for healthcare. A lot of these, what they so called unicorns, these billion-dollar companies.
Yeah.
So many of which are in the UK. I think that's very important
really
to mention.
Good, strong.
UK
has
more than France and Germany put together. Mm. People forget that.
Yeah.
And it's getting more and more. It's not getting less. Mm. Healthcare, fantastic sector. Finance will always be there. The traditional banking may be replaced by, you know, private capital or, you know, the more shadow banking, private equity houses who, not just doing private equity actually, probably doing more debt deals than they do buying and selling companies now, you know, like the KKRs and Apollo.
Yeah.
So finance will always be big, and London is, as I go on and on, is the world's international centre of finance.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than anywhere else, and it still is, and there's no sign of that changing. So good news there, and there are of course other sectors too, but those I think are the big ones. And if you thought of it as a sector, regulation, investigations, compliance, think of those as sectors from a legal point of view, because there's business sectors and there's legal sectors, and they don't necessarily, and they're not necessarily the same. Those are sectors which you're going to need lawyers in spades for those.
For many years to come.
Yeah.
So we've touched on that in previous podcasts, that growth of kind of the regulatory lawyer.
Absolutely.
And
private equity. Sorry, I didn't mention that. But I know it's in finance, but that, you know, there's a couple of trillion sitting around in private equity waiting to be. That's quite a lot of money. You leverage that up, that's a lot more. That's a lot of business.
Yeah. So a lot of interesting, these kind of growth areas that have kind of really, we see, you know, not just from 2016, but huge potential going into the future. I mean, indeed, it sort of tracks some of the themes of the Legal Cheek commercial awareness events that we do for students, focusing on some of these growing sectors. Mm-hmm. Now, just moving on to kind of theme of politics in quite a broad sense. And as I said, we mentioned Brexit and Trump at the beginning. But you've kind of got a theme here, and this doesn't necessarily track with either of those two developments, but of a kind of new globalization that we've seen. Again, you've kind of got the, it's particularly accelerated after the pandemic, but a kind of, what you're seeing more and more basically is the US and the EU subsidizing their own companies.
Yeah.
In a way that, and obviously China's been doing that for some time. And it's a sort of different type of globalization.
Well, I think that's because of the massive economic power, obviously, of the US particularly, which outpaces everybody. This approach of to if you like, subsidize in sort of directly or indirectly the growth of tech companies and the growth for energy going carbon neutral and whatever the things are in the US,
yeah,
whether hundreds of billions have gone into. The EU is trying to do a very similar thing, and there's a sort of protectionism around a lot of stuff as well, to say, you know, no, we're not going to buy that from such and such a place. Like, and obviously China is getting for high-tech microchip stuff, and all the Americans saying, no, you can't have anything to do with these people.
Yeah.
The EU just takes a slightly different, because the EU is so dependent on those markets that it's taken a less middle ground approach. And I guess we're taking, the UK is taking a bit more middle groundy approach.
Yeah.
But the UK can't do such subsidies. It hasn't got the financial muscle to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So I think it's got to be selective what it does, and rely, for a lot of stuff, it will always rely elsewhere. But as, if you diversify your supply chains, as COVID showed us, it's not very clever to be dependent on one country, especially if they're not that friendly for stuff, as the war in Ukraine has shown us with Russia. So dependencies, you've got to get rid of these dependencies in the important areas, clearly microchips and that sort of stuff is a very important one.
Yeah.
And I think for, we haven't talked about defence, but look at what the terrible events that are happening in the world, and it's not just Ukraine, it's not just the Middle East. I mean, I think the places like Yemen have been going for years.
Yeah.
Stuff in Africa is going on. It's all over the place.
Yep.
And like it or not, you have to be able to defend yourself.
Mm.
Now, the defence industries, this is big stuff.
Yeah.
So that's another sector.
And
that's moving with political change.
Yeah.
That there's a lot more work, and therefore,
And in this kind of world where there's, particularly around the kind of protectionism that you're seeing, Where does that leave big corporate law firms based in London? Because the UK is not necessarily the best position for some of these developments.
No. The UK's... So I'll come back to the basic thing about when it comes to law. There is still globalisation. It is a global... people are dependent on each other to some... It's a question of doing the strategic independence, getting that right.
Yeah.
But for law, international transactions, etc., as we've said before, there are two laws. There's US law and there's UK law and the UK courts. And those are the only reliable two that people use. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Law is a great commodity for the UK. And for the big international law firms, I don't think an awful lot does change. I think the emphasis of certain jurisdictions, like they've come out of Russia, obviously, and to some degree, I think China being the holy grail, I don't think any longer is a holy grail for law firms.
Yeah.
And certain other countries won't be, especially as they politically become very difficult. And so that might change. But I'm pretty sure they'll still have their global networks of offices.
Yeah.
And remain global. It's the only way UK law firms, the big ones, can be, because there's not enough going on in the UK.
Yeah.
Whereas the US law firms, we said before,
yeah,
they're their domestic market, and it's so law-oriented, the US, compared to here, which is where lawyers are not such a great business.
So it's an interesting point about, because you kind of forget that English law is kind of one of two global systems, really, isn't it? Which is a big part of...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
The appeal of UK law firms. And I suppose kind of what do you, you know, just looking kind of, you know, we're 7 years on from Brexit, but you know, we said at the beginning that it didn't have hasn't had a huge effect. Any thoughts on that?
I think one has to accept that the world moves on. There's lots of independent countries in this world who aren't part of an EU or whatever. It may mean we earn less money, it may be we're less successful, but you've got to look for, because it's done, you can moan and moan about it, but you've got to get on and find your way to get the best out of it. I don't think Brexit is real. People will give it undue weight in a world where, now, I think, you know, we've mentioned a few of these terrible existential threats, and Brexit is not one of them.
Yeah.
Which are like migration.
Yeah.
That is, for Europe, you know, is an existential threat. We've talked about climate change. It won't go away. It mustn't go away.
Yeah.
Dealing with it, I mean. And things like the information battle. I have no solutions to it. But we all know that finding what is true today is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And that is distorting so much that's going on. And I think it is going to be hugely responsible for what happens now, for example, in the Middle East. I mean, it could all be done on a pack of lies.
Yeah.
I'm not saying who's telling them, but it could be.
Yeah.
And the other thing is affordability. People want everything, and let's face it, apart from the US, which can manufacture more money all the time because it's so big, nowhere else can in the same way. Maybe China can because it can just make it up and do what it likes, but we spent everything. It's not just the UK, but Europe spent everything because of COVID, rightly or wrongly, and there's not a huge much more you can do without changing what you spend your money on.
Yeah, which is, and I suppose that's very challenging for kind of law firms in the UK and corporate law firms operating sort of internationally. And you've got, as you said, we've kind of spent, governments have, there's no room to spend anymore. Interest rates have gone up very sharply.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got these kind of slowing economies. I mean, again, it's I think often you hear from students who are looking to get into law firms, and they're quite worried about the state of the economic cycle, and they think,
everybody does. I mean,
yeah, but there's,
and naturally, yeah, when you're looking at that, I think you've got to think a bit beyond the next 6 months.
Yeah,
the world adapts, and okay, it could blow itself up. Of course, it can. Well, there's a risk of that, but if that happens, there's no point worrying about that because that's not something that's going to do everybody in. So the world adapts within either a year, 2 years, we'll be having different conversations.
Yeah.
The M&A world will revive, say, next year, because everybody's price expectations and financing methods will adapt.
Yeah.
People get used to things much quicker than you think they will.
Yeah.
And I think with the US, law firms are like any other businesses. They have to grow, get more profitable, be more productive. And if actually all the businesses in the UK did that, the UK would be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, some are not very good.
So, and I suppose the legal sector, corporate legal sector is a great example of a
pretty good
sector that's done really well. Yeah. And I suppose a theme of all these podcasts has been adapting, hasn't it? That's probably been one of the biggest themes. And we've seen how law firms like, you know, your former law firm, Allen & Overy, have adapted. And you know, from, I mean, I remember when you talked about your trainee interview and it was just a kind of nondescript office, you couldn't find it, there was barely a sign, and now you can't miss the NO office, and it's become something much bigger, globalized, but you look at this kind of period that's coming up with these kind of, like you say, there's not a lot of it in the locker for governments to spend, interest rates are much higher. Do you have a sense of how kind of law firms are going to adapt to deal with this environment?
Well, I think the law firm business, as we've said, is a pretty straightforward one. There's plenty of business around. The worst thing that could happen is everybody just freezes now. But that's not going to happen because there's too many problems in the world, and people, clients need their problems solved, and there's always a legal element to that. And there's problem solvers who are in the law firms, which should always do well. Law firms may have to, at various times, like all businesses, cut their cloth a bit, and, you know, salaries could go down as well as up a little bit, but they're pretty, in the city law firms, they're pretty inflated by any measure, including partners' take and income. Some law firms have been making redundancies, as you know, recently. There have been two or three. But, you know, they're not massive redundancies. And but that will always be, that's part of all businesses. And I think if you go into law thinking it's sheltered from those things, it's obviously not. What you've got to have hope is interest rates at 5%. Let's get used to a new normal. And yeah, you've got less to spend in your pocket, but wages have gone up. I just think you've got to look at what's there. If you want to be a lawyer, there's nothing to be afraid of.
So right now, does it remind you of any other time in your career?
Well, there've been, I think that there were various times, when you thought, and recessions, when crashes, you know, market crashes, we talked about those. You got worried after your firm, you start talking as partners, you started to talk about, let's say take the financial crisis in 2008, big for law firms, and most of the big ones, the financial institutions were massive clients. And hang on, we've suddenly lost four of them and wiped out. They no longer exist. Or they've been taken over by somebody else. These are four of our biggest clients. They've gone. So where's that work going to come from? And the, you know, the capital markets world, instead of being, you know, complex products driven, they've all gone. They all went. And so all those lawyers with clever brains who were doing that needed to do something else. But you adapted. And and then new financings came in, you know, from, as we talked about, KKRs and the like. And so that's, you have to try and then grab that market. If you can. The great thing about the law firms, I think, in the UK, the really good ones, is they have reputation. And clients, when they're in difficulty or they have a big thing, what used to be called the IBM factor, you might call it the Google factor or the Apple factor these days, they go to quality. They go to where they can't be criticised for. So, no, I would be confident that, unless they totally mismanage themselves and muck up their own finances,
they'll be okay. They'll adapt. Final question I was going to ask you about was this theme of law firms increasing in size in order to compete in a global marketplace. Again, that's been a theme of this podcast right through from the 80s. And the latest development of that is your old firm, Allen Overy, announcing that just a few days ago it's going to merge with Shimmer & Sterling. I think that's been all agreed now. Big transatlantic magic circle merger that people have been waiting for. What do you make of that?
Well, it's, I think, it's something that, if you like, getting a, becoming a leading firm in the US, a major firm, has been something that Allen Overy, and it's no secret, I'm sure, other firms have wanted to do, but it's up to date. There wasn't an opportunity with anybody that would work. This, the two firms seem to have see a common vision of what might work for them both, for whatever reasons, and I can't. But you can see they will be unique in terms of their worldwide reputation and competence in three different, if you take, I think, guy, they told me that a third of the business will be in the US, a third will be, you know, here, and a third will be global. Well, that's a very different thing to the other very big firms. And a lot of the other very big firms are not partnerships in the same way that, you know, they have these things called Vereint in Switzerland or whatever. And those are not the type of firm that compete with. They're a very different model. I think it's a fantastic opportunity for those firms. If they can make it work, and they have to make it work, and that's where the work, the hard graft comes in. And if the good partners stay, and I think from a recruitment point of view, it would be a fantastic thing, because I think people in the US who want to go internationally, well, why wouldn't I try there, you know?
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. I mean, there are other lots still, all the competition is, so it's by no means done.
Yeah. Do you think more will follow?
Could do, but I don't see, I don't see which big US law firm, I don't see which ones would do it.
Yeah.
That's why I, and that's been the problem.
Yeah.
So I no, that's probably the answer, but it might.
Interesting, interesting.
But, you know, as I say, that's a 5-year prediction. You can't rely on any of those.
Be careful of those 5-year predictions. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Alan. It's great to bring the Legal History podcast right up to the present day. It's been, it's a fantastic series. If you listen to this one and you haven't listened to the others, do go back and check them out. Alan, thank you so much for taking part.
No, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. It's made me think back, and I've remembered some things that I thought I didn't realise was so interesting, and it's been a pleasure. It's been just good fun. Thanks.
Great stuff. Well, likewise, really enjoyed it, and thank you to everyone for listening.